Well, welcome to the 23rd Regiment's podcast for the War of 1812. This episode is Causes and Effects. Now, I should start out by explaining that the reason that I want to do this is there are a lot of misconceptions about the War of 1812, and it really came home to me when I was having a discussion with somebody else. They made the comment that, well, we didn't win either the Revolution or the War of 1812. And what they meant by that was, and they came right out and said it, they said, well, all we really did was wear the English out. Now, where that might have been true, certainly in the Revolution, it shows a huge difference between what we did in the Revolution and what we did in the War of 1812. And it ignores all those differences, and probably ignores what the result was. But before we get into that, let's talk about what started the War of 1812. The War of 1812 was probably the slowest burn war we've ever had. It took us 9 years to declare war. It was a long time for us, and we didn't really want to do it. It was pretty desperate. You have to think of the War of 1812 as a case where there's someone in front of you, and they're pushing you. And they keep pushing you and pushing you and pushing you, and you're heading slowly back for a cliff. And at some point, you have to respond. Well, that's what we did for the War of 1812, but it took us 9 years to do it. Because the War of 1812 really starts in 1803. So let's paint the picture of 1803. In 1803, the English were happy with us. They were okay. They thought we were an experiment. We were a republic. And they were waiting for us to fail so they could reabsorb us. But we were okay. We were just a little part of North America, and it was okay. They owned a large part of it, sort of the Spanish. It was all okay. But what was going on in Europe at that time was another republic that they were even more opposed to, and that was Napoleon. And now they started to get worried. This republic thing was starting to spread, and it wasn't good news. Napoleon was bad, so that connected all republics bad, and we started to look awfully bad. But then we made it much worse. In 1803, from our little country where they were happy with us being where we are, we bought Louisiana. And all of a sudden, we went from some little country that the English had to deal with, and hopefully a country that was going to fail, and all of a sudden, we became a colonial power. Our colonies really were Louisiana. We became a colonial power. And oh, we became a colonial power in the worst possible way. We gave money to Napoleon. And the English really saw that as a betrayal. Here's why. Prior to this, England was one of our major trading partners. In fact, one of the things that we traded with them pretty intensively was potassium nitrate. Now, potassium nitrate is one of the things that make up gunpowder. In fact, we started a whole company to make gunpowder in the United States, specifically so we could sell it to the English. That company's name was DuPont. I'm sure you've heard of it. Now, what we were doing was we were becoming a major supplier for the English Army. And then, after becoming a major supplier of the English Army and basically a friend, we went off and gave money to Napoleon, and we became an empire-building colony country in North America. Now, you got to bear in mind, the English had fought wars with every other colonial power in North America. The French, the Spanish, the Dutch, anybody who touched foot in North America as a colonial power, the English fought. So we suddenly went from friend status to enemy status. And really, worse than that, we betrayed them. We worked with their enemies. And we gave them money. And that money was going to be used to kill English soldiers. Not a good picture. So obviously the English were very upset with us and began to make that known. It's really at that point where the English start treating Americans as a hostile country. Now, the next event that really happens to us Yeah, I really have to put in context. So, in modern parlance, imagine the following. One of our aircraft carriers, say the Nimitz, is sailing down the Chesapeake Bay. Now, the Chesapeake Bay is certainly in American waters, at least that's what we think of it. And while the Nimitz is sailing down the Chesapeake Bay, none of its aircraft are flying. They're all lashed at a deck. They're on their way out, say, to the Mediterranean, and they're just sailing along. Nobody's ready for any kind of action or any kind of other activity. And they pass an English cruiser. Well, English are our allies. They've been our allies for over 200 years. And they pass, and the English run a set of signal flags up this cruiser that say, prepare to be boarded. Well, of course, we laugh and say, that's funny, kind of amusing. And while the English pass very close to our aircraft carrier, the Nimitz, they open fire. And they do some serious damage to the aircraft carrier. In fact, they force it to stop. And they actually board. Now, imagine how we'd feel about that. Our country would be livid. We'd be extremely angry because all of a sudden, who we thought was a friend and a trading partner opened fire on one of our naval vessels in effectively our own waters. And in 1807, that's exactly what happened. A ship by the name of the Chesapeake was getting ready. It was in the Chesapeake Bay, and they had supplies on deck, and the gun ports were closed. Nobody was expecting any trouble. They were on their way to the Mediterranean. We'd had, prior to that, some problems with Tripoli and Morocco, and we had to patrol the Mediterranean to keep them from raiding our shipping. So the Chesapeake sent out to do that. It was its turn. And it was sailing down the Chesapeake Bay in this condition where it wasn't ready for any kind of combat. And an English frigate, the cruisers of the day, if you will, passes by, called the Leopard. And the Leopard effectively signals our ship to say, prepare to be boarded. And of course, at the time, you can't board a military vessel from another country. That just doesn't happen. And they open fire. And it isn't very long before we have to, again, stop and put up the white flag because we really can't defend ourselves. The gun ports are closed. We're not ready. It's more or less a surprise attack. And you know how we feel about surprise attacks. Remember December 7th. This is effectively December 7th of the War of 1812. Only it happens in 1807. And the English board this ship and claim they're English deserters. And they actually take four people off the Chesapeake, take them back to the Leopard. One of them was, in fact, a man who never claimed American citizenship, and they hanged him. And that might have, in fact, been an English deserter. And so they might have had a point. However, you can tell that the captain of the Leopard thought that he probably made a mistake. This wasn't a good thing. Maybe gone a little bit too far, firing on another vessel, a military vessel, is really, for all intents and purposes, an act of war. And the captain might have slowly gleaned on this and said, well, that's not a good thing. And he took three other men off, but he was very careful about who he picked. Now, the American papers didn't make a big deal out of this, but the three people that he picked were all blacks. And the theory was, at least this is my theory anyway, that the captain of the Leopard, being somewhat embarrassed about having opened fire on another naval vessel of another country, and only found one deserter, really, decided he'd take some more so that it would at least justify the attack and the whole thing. And he decided, well, if I'm going to take some people, let me take some blacks, because I know the Americans don't like them. So we'll take those guys, and it'll be okay. They won't really care. Well, that wasn't really the case. We didn't like that at all. Why would we? Just like today, if some British cruiser opened fire on one of our major warships like the Nimitz, we'd be very, very upset. And we'd be very upset if we thought that it was really for no particular reason. And one of the things we were doing, remember, was we were still supplying the English with gunpowder and with potassium nitrate. It's rather like the English opening fire on one of our ships during Lend-Lease, during World War II. we would have been livid. And that's exactly where we were. But that still didn't make us go to war. We really didn't want to. Remember, we're a republic. We don't like declaring war. It wasn't our style, particularly during this time period. European empires with kings, those are the people who declared war, not republics. We didn't want to declare war on anybody. It wasn't our style. We weren't trying to build an empire yet by conquering it. We had no designs on territory in Europe. So we really didn't want to go to war, but it was starting to get hard now. By 1807, things were not looking good. The English could attack our naval vessels in our own waters. But we still didn't do it. We still sat back. We tried economic sanctions, which didn't work, of course, because at that time the federal government got all its money from trade, from taxes on trade, and our major partner was England. And when we stopped trading with England, the federal government went broke. Not a good thing. So we lifted that embargo, and we felt really bad. There was nothing we could do, and then things got worse. Really, the first terrorist attack on the United States occurred. And let's explain what that means. We were busy expanding in the West, particularly in Illinois and Michigan and places like that. In our, our game plan that we had was to buy land. We didn't do it in the most upright way. We bought land from the Native Americans. And the Native Americans sort of played this game. They would sell not their land, but the land of other tribes. So the Winnebagoes would sell us Miami land. The Miami would sell us Winnebago land. But all in all, it didn't make much difference. What was happening was we were buying land really cheaply, or thought we were buying land, and then we moved into it, assuming it was ours. It didn't really go well. And the Indians at this time, or the Native Americans at this time, had suddenly begun to realize that, well, this wasn't a good plan. That they were going to lose here. And it was actually a Native American chieftain by the name of Tecumseh who realized that this was not a good plan. Unfortunately, his response would have been what a terrorist, or what we would call a terrorist response today. He decided he had to attack us. Why not? We were attacking him. He decided he had to attack us. And it was okay for us to fight them. But so he decided they had to fight back. And they had to do it by killing settlers and by killing civilians, men, women, children. They had to get together and organize and do that on an organized basis. It was, if you want, the sort of the precursor to state-sponsored terrorism. Now, all in all, that wouldn't have been too bad. We'd been fighting the Indians for quite some time. It wasn't the first time, and we certainly weren't very clean about it. So there was no reason for us to not expect the Indians to fight back in whatever way they could. But that wasn't really what got us upset. What got us upset was a battle that occurred in 1811. And this is really the final straw, if you will. In 1811, we fought a battle. And what happened was Tecumseh went off to try to convince some other Indian tribes that they had to resist the United States. They had to band together, get together, and attack us. Now, he was gone, and a gentleman by the name of William Henry Harrison decided he would take advantage of that, and he would take some armed troops up to where, effectively, to a place called Prophetstown, to a place where was the center, the locus, if you will, of this organization. And he was going to attack it. And he marches his troops up, and at first he thinks, I'm going to be pretty suave here. I'm just going to threaten them. And march these troops up there and threaten them and let them know, you know, who's really in charge here. But while he's doing that, while he's sneaking up on them and with his armed troops and so he can threaten them, they're attacked. They're attacked at a little place called Tippecanoe. And there's a fair amount of fighting there. And in the end, the Indians are actually driven off. They're defeated. The surprise attack really doesn't work. And here again is another surprise attack. But worse yet, what we find is English Brown Bess muskets. Now, you got to keep in mind these India pattern muskets. That's the top of the line for the English Army. It's as if today we were to attack a terrorist camp in Afghanistan to find somebody had provided them with the latest in military hardware. And again, we'd be pretty upset with somebody, especially imagine if one of our allies, say the English again, not that they would do this, of course, but say the English again, had supplied the terrorists with night goggles and armored piercing rounds for tanks and all sorts of the latest technology of warfare and missiles to shoot down drones and those kind of things. That's effectively the way we saw the English literally supplying. Worse yet, they just didn't supply the Indians with the latest military technology. They supplied an Indian group with military technology who they knew wanted to attack the United States and kill not only military personnel, but civilians. And we knew this. And the English knew it. And we knew they knew. And that was pretty much it. That was the last straw. At that point, we were pretty much determined to go to the English and say, okay, you have to stop this. This is it. You just can't do this anymore. You attacked our ships. You've supplied terrorists. It's about as bad as you can get in terms of relationship with another country. And so we told them they have to stop. And what the English answer was quite simply, no. And even then, when our president went to Congress and said, look, we've been attacked. The English are supplying our enemies with high-grade weapons. We have to go to war. We don't want to do this, but we're backed up against the cliff. Our bully is continuing to push us, and we have to do something. Well, even then, nobody wanted to. The House didn't want to vote for it. The Senate took 13 days to really debate the whole thing and decide what they were going to do before they actually had a vote. And it took quite a while for us to decide, okay, there really isn't any choice here. We would like not to go to war. Remember, we don't want to do that. But we would like not to go to war. But we really felt we had no choice. And when the English attitude really was, we asked them to stop, and we sort of did it, you know, a little bit more forcefully, not as politely as we had. But when the English simply said no, that was pretty much it. That pretty much tipped the scales, and we decided that there had to be a war. Now, you got to compare that with the American Revolution, whereby, you know, 1775, really, we were all hot. In fact, let's face it, we were at war with Great Britain before we did announce that we were a separate country. So we went to war pretty quickly. We didn't hesitate. We didn't try lots of other things. We did try some. But when we tried those things, we were shooting people at the same time. So we offered our olive branch to the English, and we did. We were busy shooting them at the same time. So you have to really understand that the War of 1812 was a total reversal of that. We spent 9 years trying to be nice, trying to say, well, you know, you really shouldn't do this. You really shouldn't shoot our warships. You really shouldn't supply our enemies. You really shouldn't treat us badly. We're your suppliers. We're sending you gunpowder. We're sending you potassium nitrate so you can make more gunpowder. We're your lend-lease buddies. You should not be attacking us. You know, again, imagine the English attacking us during World War II when we were supplying them with guns and tanks. That simply wouldn't have worked out well at all for the English. And it didn't work out well for the English in the War of 1812 either. Because what it did was it convinced us that we had to go to war with them. So that, really in a nutshell, is the context by which we decided that we had to defend ourselves. And the English were pretty happy to go to war with us. They weren't conciliatory. They didn't want to say, well, you know, all right, we'll stop. They didn't want to supply Napoleon with money. They didn't want us to be a colonial power in North America. They didn't want us interfering with anything that they were doing. They wanted us to just be quiet, be a little country, send us supplies, we'll pay you. But leave us alone and don't do anything else. Don't expand. Don't try buying land in North America. And whatever you do, do not give money to the French. Now, you got to put this in context, too. A lot of history books will say, well, you know, what really caused the War of 1812 was that the British kidnapped the American sailors, which they did, and they kidnapped whole ships. They took over whole ships, and that, of course, made business people angry. But you have to really put that in context. The French captured more American ships than the English did. The French captured a lot more ships than the English did. But we didn't go to war with the French. But on the other hand, the French were attacking us in our own waters. We weren't supplying the French, and the French weren't shooting back at us. The French also weren't arming our enemies with the latest technologies. So the French didn't look bad at all. I mean, on the whole, they didn't look bad. They were, okay, they were kidnapping our people. We didn't like that. They were taking our ships. We didn't like that either. But we weren't ready to go to war with the French over that. That was just, okay, we're going to have to stop that. We don't really like that. But the situation changed really for the English. Because the English, they just didn't kidnap our sailors and our ships, which they did do. But they did these other things as well, attack our naval vessels in our own waters, supply our enemies, and that really was the difference. So although the newspapers at the time made a big deal about free trade, and I think we made a big deal about that in the newspapers because it sounded good. Again, we didn't want to conquer any territory, not really. We weren't an empire. We weren't all set to go to England and invade, for instance. We didn't want to do that at all. And we weren't hot for conquering, existing countries. The Indians, not so much. But we weren't hot for conquering other countries. We didn't want to go to England and invade there or capture Spain. We weren't interested in that. But we certainly were interested in trying to do our own thing in North America. And we really wanted to become, for all intents and purposes, a colonial power. We wanted to expand westward. That was our colonies, if you will, the western area of the North American continent. And we wanted those areas, we wanted them to become part of our country. And we effectively made them colonies, and at least from the English point of view, and that made us a colonial power. And that put us in direct conflict with the English Empire. And it all came down to the end of 1812 and a speech that our president made in Congress to say, well, we asked them to stop, and when we asked them to stop, what they said was no. And those are the real causes of the War of 1812.